It's Thursday, and that means it's time to talk to a professional who would never forget a name.
So, I wish your son Miller all the best.
My name is Noah!
It's the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Heaney, right now on the Sports Ticket. Brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency at 118 North Mill and Beloit. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Call them at 738-5701.
It is a party here on the Sports Ticket, joined by the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Heaney, brought to you as always by Anderson Insurance Agency there in Beloit. And every time I listen to the intro, every once in a while I catch something different from it. And one thing that stood out to me there, Brian, is that if I had my son call you and he identified himself, you probably still wouldn't recognize him because his voice has changed. It's deeper now. Dusty would agree with that, I think. Yeah, it's he's becoming a man, Brian.
I love it. That's great. You know, prior to my days as a sports announcer, I was the lead in my fifth grade musical, Johnny Appleseed. And
nice.
I had this angelic child singing voice. But when the when puberty hits and certain things drop, like my vocal cords, I couldn't sing a lick anymore to save my life. But I traded it for halfway decent speaking voice, but now I can't save anything. So here's hoping that he can still sing and sounds deeper and more mature in his day-to-day speaking voice.
I will tell you this. I don't know if he really sings, but, you know, sometimes he'll be in the shower downstairs, and he has his music jam, and you like the rap. He likes rap music. He listens to a lot of rap, and I can hear him. And to me, is it singing or is it rapping? You know, some people could argue which is which, but he definitely got a beat with that, and I hear him sometimes, and I never say anything because I just happen to be going downstairs checking on something or whatever, and I'd overhear him like, you know what, that's cool, whatever it may be. There might be a few words that maybe shouldn't be in the song or whatever, but whatever may be, at least he's happy, and that's cool because you know what, we focus on too many things in life that make us kind of unhappy. So I think it's great that he goes through that, and we're thinking about voices and how it changed. You remember The Lion Sleeps Tonight? Remember that song?
Course.
Okay, I used to be able to hit the high note in that song. I used to be able to hit the highs. Sir, let me tell you something. That doesn't happen anymore. If I tried to do that right now, I think my vocal cords would actually snap, if that's even possible. So anyway.
That's a tough one to nail.
Oh, it was tough. People were impressed I could do it back then. I don't know if that was good or if it was embarrassing. I took it as a compliment. So anyway, I had that. That was the highlight of my high school career, apparently, or junior high. Okay, so let's talk about this game against Texas. You know, this is a game, man, I tell you, there was every opportunity in the world for Kansas to win it. It was an interesting game because KU did so much better defensively guarding the three-point shot. Texas was 5 of 26, 1 of 13 in the first half. But then Texas got 14 dunks, which that doesn't happen very often. And Kansas got off to a great start. They were in control, you know, going into the second half, and then things definitely changed.
Yeah, you know, of all the losses we've had this season where you felt like we were right there with a chance to win it, Stillwater, Norman, even in Waco, we were within five on two junctures in the last 5 or 6 minutes. This one stings the most by far because of what you just said. There were so many chances. I mean, and obviously, I'm always hesitant to go back and look at one play and say that's what changed the game because you could do that with any game that's close. But when you're in overtime on a game that was tied at the end of regulation and you have a wide-open missed dunk where there wasn't a Longhorn within 8 feet of McCormick, in overtime when Jalen Wilson's driving to the hole, the ball just slips out of his hands, and then you look at the missed free throws. We shoot 57%. There were multiple missed front ends where, gosh dang, if you just hit one of those, it could be a different game. But ifs, ands, and buts, right?
Yeah.
You can't look back on the what-ifs too much. But it does sting because they played so well in the first half, had that 21-4 run, just really put the hammer down. And to see that melt away so quickly and then yet still have a chance to win it on numerous instances. I mean, once they got to OT and Brown hits the three to start overtime, I'm thinking, man, we got this. And
me
then
too.
Even, you know, 90 seconds to go, McCormick hits his last bucket before he fouls out. We go up two. And even with him fouling out, you feel like, hey, we still got this. And ultimately, you know, even though we held Texas without a field goal the last 2:37 of overtime, they got it all done at the free throw line, and we didn't. And we would just go in these funks where we had some bad possessions. And so disappointing for sure. It stings more than any of those other losses because there were just so many chances to clinch this thing, and it would have extended the win streak to 6. And I know you want to talk about seeding later, and we'll get into that then, but, I mean, Kansas, had they won on Tuesday, I think there's a legitimate case to be made that they could finish as a 3 seed.
Oh, you bet.
And you don't want to write that off now. I mean, there's still a chance to run the table in Kansas City and beat Baylor and all that. And we may be playing another game next week if they can add one, or you could add to your resume a little bit. But, I mean, you were on a roll to where when the committee's looking at last 10 and all that, you might have been able to say we went 9-1 or 10-0 in our final, you know, 10 games. And still, you know, could have that if they were on the table. But the point is, that would have been a really nice feather in their cap, and it slips away. But as Coach Self said, in the grand scheme of things, it immediately affects the Big 12 conference seeding for the tournament there. But that doesn't bother him a ton. He feels like they got better as a team, and therefore momentum was sustained. You just hate to have some of those little opportunities slip through your grasp, because while you know, it can happen in February and you live to play another day, that happens in March, your season's over. And so they got to find a way to make some of those little plays that evaded them on Tuesday night.
Yeah, absolutely. Brian Heenan, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Millen Boulevard, or call them at 738-5701. You know, foul trouble was important. You know, McCormick gets a couple early, and KU weathered that storm, and then he picked up his last one about a minute 27 to go there in overtime. You mentioned the wide open dunk, and then the turnover for Wilson, and then the missed free throws. And when I was playing ball back in the day, my coach, he said, listen, when you miss the front end at 1-1, that's 0-2. That's what he called it.
Yep.
He said it's 0-2. It's not 0-1. It's 0-2. You didn't get the second one, and you should at least hit 1 out of 2. You hit the first one, you at least got a chance of the second. And some coaches do believe that, and I agree with them on it, although that really would hurt your free throw percentage if you missed the front end and they counted as 0-2. But I want to focus on one player in particular, and that's Jalen Wilson, because I felt for him. I mean, he had the wide-open path to the bucket. It was going to be a layup. He was probably thinking dunk, layup, whatever. And things like that happen. And that's not the reason he lost the game. As you accurately pointed out, you know, foul trouble, you know, breakdowns defensively, they get dunks, you know, other guys missing free throws, guys missing open threes. You can point to anything in a close game. You can point to officiating as well, whatever. But I felt bad for him because he is a young guy. You and I have talked about that. He only played a couple games last year. And then he had a chance at the end, and granted, it's a long shot. He's at the line down 3, and he has to make the first, and then you're going to have to try to miss the second on purpose and then get a put back or a kick out to try to tie and force a double overtime. And then that free throw was short. And I saw him hanging his head a little bit, certainly, which I probably would be doing the same thing if I were in his shoes, heading to the locker room. What about the psyche for young kids like that, and in particular for Jalen Wilson, because you got a big game coming up against Baylor. As you pointed out, if KU beats Baylor, this could somehow maybe move them up to a solid 4, maybe even eventually a 3, depending on how they do in the Big 12 tournament. But what about that psyche and trying to build him back up, if he even needs to be built back up? Because that can be tough when you feel like you've let your team down in regards to losing the ball out of bounds when you had an easy layup, and then, you know, a long shot, but you missed the front end of the 1-1, or missed the first free throw, the way you have no chance to really tie the game and send it in double overtime.
Yeah, you know, it's something that I think we're lucky we have Bill Self on the sideline, because he is the ultimate button pusher. He knows how to give guys tough love when they need it, or put your arm around them when they need that. And if there was any concern with Jalen's psyche leaving the game, I'm sure Bill nipped it in the bud fast. And honestly, while those couple of breakdowns, the lost ball driving the hole, the missed free throw, could clearly creep into his mind, he's the least of my worries.
Yeah.
He went out and got 16-13, and if I was any one of the assistants or head coach Bill Self, I would remind him of that. We're not even anywhere near the
yes.
finish line if it wasn't for you. And when your big man, David McCormick, who granted, you know, only played 3 first-half minutes, and that affects the stat line, but he only gets you 4 rebounds, and Jalen gets you 13. I mean, he is by far, to me, the best story of this season. And I know he had a 3-week stretch in January where he kind of hit the rookie wall, and he was a little bit more of a marked man, and opponent defenses were trying to take him away. But he's broken through that now. We're talking about double-doubles in six of his last seven games, nine overall. Would have been seven in a row, but true story, at K-State a week ago, Coach Self put him on the bench to give him some rest, and we went on this huge run with some reserves in there, and then Marcus Garrett, and the game was pretty much clinched, and Coach looked over and realized, oh, wait, I haven't played him in like 8 minutes. Hey, hurry up, get in there.
Yeah.
And at that point, he was sitting on 11 points and nine boards, and he had like 15 more seconds to try to make something happen before they put in the walk-on. Couldn't, and thus the double-double stretch is snapped. Coach Self will tell you he doesn't care about double-doubles. They really don't mean anything. But, hey, that's still a pretty impressive run, of which we've not seen the likes of since the Thomas Robinson-type rebounder at Kansas. And so Jalen has been a stud. And I think he's a guy that's not short on confidence to begin with. So hopefully he doesn't need too much of a pep talk. But I think for a less mature, less self-confident freshman player, and even though he's a redshirt freshman, he's a freshman, you're right. Those would be a couple of back-to-back breakdowns that could require some, you know, consoling and building up of the confidence and all that. I think he'll be okay, though. And I think the easiest way to make sure he is just to remind him, dude, you're about as important as anybody we got. And on a night when your senior leader went 2-for-12, and then your big man that was, you know, projected for all conference honors and all that, I thought in the second half, David just looked sped up. He looked a little jittery.
Mm-hmm.
He looked like the guy that we saw for a lot of his first two seasons, as opposed to the guy that's really settled in over the last, you know, 4 or 5 weeks and become one of the premier posts in the conference. So Jalen, he was consistent. He was what we thought he would be. He just can't allow a couple of mistakes like that to plague him going forward. You got to have a short-term memory like an NFL quarterback that just threw a pick, and I think he'll do that.
Yeah, I try to put myself in the shoes of other people, and obviously, I remember that when I was in school too. You make a mistake that you felt like cost your team the game. You need people to lift you up. And I feel that Kansas has that certainly, but even though people can lift you up, you can still be, you know, down about it because you feel like, if I made this one play or whatever. And I think that's the challenge. It's a challenge in life, let alone in sports, is, you know, what happens when you get knocked down? How do you respond to adversity? And this clearly would be about responding to adversity, as the team is going to have to do after a tough loss against Texas. So now the matchup is Baylor coming up on Saturday. Baylor finally got back on the hardwood. They're definitely rusty. They pulled one out against Iowa State, 77-72. What are your thoughts on this rematch of a game that KU lost down at Waco earlier in the year?
Well, I think that it'll be about as jacked as our team's been all season to play a game, because obviously it's senior night. We haven't lost a senior night in 37 years, and yet you don't often play undefeated number two on senior night, right?
Yeah.
And so I think our guys will be fired up. Marcus will be fired up. You know, technically, Tehan and Lightfoot are seniors too, but I think there's a chance they could both be coming back. So it'll be a good atmosphere. It's a game that there's a lot to play for there, and I don't think our guys care about the fact that 2002 under Roy Williams is the only Big 12 title team to ever go undefeated. But it'll probably be mentioned at some point that Baylor's trying to do something that only a Kansas team has done, and we have a chance to derail that. And so I think that that's part of your motivation as well. But more than anything, it's just a chance to get a signature win, close out the regular season, at least in terms of conference games, on a high note. And as you said, you could vault a full seed line based on a win this good if get it. And so I think that they sense this is an incredible opportunity. And they'll remember the fact that Butler hung 30 on him and was 7-of-9 from three. And I think, you know, Marcus Garrett, if he's truly the best on-ball defender of the Bill Self era, and we're going to say he's a masterful painter like a Michelangelo or a Leonardo da Vinci when it comes to his artistry defensively, well, this is his masterpiece. This is his chance with one final blank canvas at home to go out there and just absolutely do his finest work in his final hour and try to erase Jared Butler. Now, Kansas switches so much defensively that he won't be exclusively on him throughout the night, but I do think, I mean, what more fitting of a way for him to go out than to take a guy that could be conference player of the year on an undefeated team with national championship hopes and absolutely go out there and just shadow him all night and make life tough on him. I think that will be the most fun matchup to watch, not knowing how exclusively he'll be on him just yet, but I think that's going to be something to keep an eye on. And the problem is, even if you take him away, then you got Teague, and you got, I mean, they have so many different options you got to worry about. But, you know, it's definitely a situation where for Marcus Garrett and his legacy, I think he could truly pin a fantastic final chapter here, at least in terms of regular season games, if he did that. Remember Udoka on senior night a year ago, he had a career high, I think it was 31, on his final game, goes out with a bang and did everything that Udoka does well in that game. Mm-hmm. Well, this is Marcus's chance to do everything that he's known for one last time in the fog, and not to do it against K-State or Iowa State, but to do it against the class of the league with one of the top perimeter players that the Kansas has faced in recent memory. And so I'm fired up to see what that looks like on Saturday
night. Yeah, that should be fun. Well, pregame at 6:30 and tip off at 7 o'clock coming up Saturday, Baylor at Kansas on Z96.3 at Lake, your home for the Jayhawks in North Central Kansas. Okay, last one before they're off the wall. Seeding, it matters, no question. Seeding matters. But what about a 4 or a 5? Like right now, a lot of people have KU on the 4 line. You know, if they lose to Baylor and then lose early in the tournament, they could easily slide to 5. I still think that if they beat Baylor and then have a good showing Big 12, I think you can certainly argue that KU should be on the 3 line because of their strength of schedule. They haven't had any bad losses at all. No losses to quad 2, 3, or 4. All their losses are top 20 net teams. I sit here and I think they can get to a 3. And I know the criticism will be, well, KU's got this many losses. They're getting a 3 seed because of their pedigree. But if you really look at the resume, I think KU, if they can finish strong, still has a chance to get a 3. But what if it ends up being a 4 or a 5? Let's say we're sitting here going, well, Kansas needs to do this to be a 4 instead of a 5. There's no chance of a 3, 4, or 5. Does a 4 or 5 really matter? Like, does it matter if you're a 5 instead of a 4 or a 4 instead of a 5? Because a 5 is going to play a 12, a 4 is going to play a 13. I know 5s typically get upset more often in the tournament, if you believe in history, against 12s. But if you get by the first game, you're going to play either the 5 or the 4. Most of the time, not always. And then you're going to more than likely face the number one, whether you're a 5 or a 4 in the Sweet 16. So is there really much of a difference between the 5 and the 4?
Not a huge difference. And I didn't know you were going to ask this until right before we went on the air, so I've not had a chance to look at recent years' 5 versus 12 matchups. But, you know, they used to write articles about how that was the trendiest of all upsets, the 12 over the 5. And I don't know how many we've seen on average the last 5 years or so. It doesn't seem like it's been as, you know, sexy of an upset or frequent of a happening upset as it was made out to be 10 years ago, let's say.
Right.
But certainly, historically, you're right. 12s beat 5s more than 13s beat 4s. I guess if there's any analytical contribution I can make, it's that if you were truly going to be the best of the 5s as opposed to the worst of the 4s, maybe that gets you in a slightly better region. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that works. And maybe actually you get paired together. Right. Maybe that's not true. Yeah, I'd be interested to see how they cluster it. But obviously, if depending on where you fell on the respective seed line, if that puts you away from Gonzaga, they're not going to put you with Baylor because they try not to make sure conference teams play each other until the Elite Eight. So if you could get out of Gonzaga's region and out of Baylor's region by being on a different seed line or whatever, then, hey, let's do it. I'll take my chances with those other one seeds in a Sweet 16. But I guess it really depends on just how close they were to the two respective lines, because who's to say that we will be the last of the 4s or the first of the 5s? We might be somewhere in the middle. But I do think where it would matter is which one seed you particularly get paired with. Mm-hmm. And yet Bill Self would tell you, boys, you're reading way too into this, because to even get to that hypothetical, we're going to have to beat two really good teams the first 2 rounds. And that's the way we Kansas fans think. We're like, okay, well, what does this mean for our Sweet 16? What does this mean for our Elite Eight? And sometimes you don't even get there because it's that tough of a tournament field. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we'll have to keep in mind. I remember a couple years ago when we were in Salt Lake, you know, everybody was talking about Kansas City's Sweet 16 Elite Eight hosting and the fact that Roy Williams was going to be there and Calipari and you know, Kentucky, Carolina, Kansas. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the other team, but I mean, it was going to be maybe Michigan State, I can't remember, but it was going to be like the hottest ticket in Kansas City scalping history. And then, you know, obviously we didn't make it. So sometimes you start to read too far down the line. But that would be my thought is, you know, look for who the one is and try to get out of the region of the Gonzaga.
No, I agree with you. And I've done some research while you were chatting about that. So I think I've answered my own question here. 29, 13 seeds have beaten four seeds. 29 in NCAA tournament history since 85, which means that a 13 seed has a winning percentage of just under 21%. A 12 seed has beaten a 5 seed 50 times, and the winning percentage for a 12 seed against a 5 is just under 36%. So it's a 15% difference, more than I would have thought, between 4s and 13s and 5 versus 12s. And you were asking about recently. Of course, we had no tournament last year. 2 years ago, 3 12s beat 5s. Three of the four 12-5 matchups went to the 12. Yep, Liberty beat Mississippi State, Murray State beat Marquette, and Oregon beat Wisconsin. And the 4-13 matchups, Brian Haney, well, the last time we had a tournament, you remember this probably, K-State was a 4, lost to a 13, UC Irvine. And the year prior to that, Wichita State was a 4 and lost to a 13 in Marshall. So, you know, 5 versus 12, more upsets, but the last two tournaments we've had, schools from Kansas have been 4 seeds and have lost the 13s, if you're worried about that trend. So you know what I say? Just go out and grab a 3 seed and don't worry about any of it.
There you go. Now, are you telling me, I'm trying to think, KU seeding in Salt Lake, weren't we the 4 and Auburn was the 5? And if that's the case, the only 5 that won that year went all the way to the Final Four?
That's right, and that is correct. And you remember how the game went for Auburn, how they won in order to move on and play KU in that round?
Just barely.
Yes.
I mean, New Mexico State, right?
Yeah, they won by 1.
Yeah, and honestly, I thought they should have lost. So, yeah, it's funny how close it actually is.
I'm trying to think last time KU was a 4 seed, but because it was that the Bucknell? No, that was 3-14. Was that Bradley? 4-13? KU was a 4, Bradley was a 13?
Might have been.
I think that
that's
was
right. Worse. That's as bad as it's been for self. You know, it was
yes.
Incredible.
That is incredible.
To speak to his testament of regular season consistency. A 4 seed is celebrated in most places, and it's Kansas for 18 years, it's the low water mark.
Exactly. So. It's a down year. All right, time for the off the wall. I've been hearing this argument a lot. Last Monday, it was like 20 below zero in the state. This Monday, it was 65 to 70 degrees, an 80 to 90 degree turnaround in a span of 7 days, which means the old adage is true, Brian. If you don't like the weather in Kansas, just wait a little while. So that was a big swing. So my question to you, and you and I are built from the same cloth, so we'll see if we have the same answer here, and we agree, would you rather it be 100 degrees, if you had to choose one or the other, you had to choose one, would you rather it be 100 or zero?
I'd take 100 any day of the week.
Amen, brother. That's what I say. I think people are nuts that they think it'd be better to be zero. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
100 degrees, I can take my clothes off. I mean, I can pour water on top of my head. I don't have to have 18 layers of clothing. My feet aren't numb. My nose isn't numb. I mean, my eyes aren't watering. I can give you 1,000 reasons why I'll take 100 over a zero any day. But I got people telling me, no, cold's better. I don't get it.
I mean, if it's 100, sure, you could get a bad sunburn, but just go sit under a tree.
Yes.
You go sit under a tree at zero, you're going to get frostbite. You know?
Thank you.
And not to mention, you know, if it's 100, you know, the scenery looks a little bit better around
yes.
than everybody's dressed in parkas. So.
Yes. Thank you. I totally agree with
yeah.
you. You don't have to worry about snow plows. If there's snow, you don't have to. You don't have to worry about things freezing up. I don't know. I think it's an easy question to answer. If you went the other way, I'm sorry, Brian, I would have been highly disappointed in you. I'm glad you answered that question correctly in my eyes, I guess.
Well, part of it is my furnace broke yesterday, so I don't have heat since, you know, it's got down to 40s the last couple nights, and I'm thinking, man.
Oh, boy.
I'd much rather be too hot than too cold. So that was an easy answer based on when you asked.
The timing of my question was perfect. Excellent.
Yep.
Hey, man, have a great call Saturday. Hopefully KU can pull off the win. And next week we are maybe talking about KU moving up on that seed line. We appreciate the time as always, and be safe, man.
Sounds good, buddy. Thanks a lot. Pleasure as always.
Take care. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you each and every Thursday by Anderson Insurance Agency in Beloit. They have farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by, see Matt and Becky, 118 North Millen Boulevard. Call them at 738-5701.